Well, let me welcome everyone who's here this morning. Good to see you. I know we have visitors. We're glad you're here. We want to welcome you to come back at every opportunity you have. And if you've not done so, at least not recently, you should be able to see a visitor's card just in front of you, and we would appreciate you filling that out for us. But welcome, and I hope we make you feel welcome. I also want us to make sure Brother Stephen Johnson, we welcome him to the fellowship here. Stephen placed membership last Sunday morning, and so let's make sure that we welcome him and let him know we're glad he's here. We're talking about this year the idea of building an ark. That comes from an old spiritual, and it has to do with wanting to save our family, our loved ones, our friends. As you can tell from our theme verse this year in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 7, Noah built an ark, literally. And Noah was able by that to save his house or his household. And so there are various approaches that we take, and we've been exploring that throughout the year. And this last quarter, we're looking at the idea of wisdom, the way we think, maybe the basic philosophies, approaches to life that we have, viewpoints we have. And if that is the wisdom of the Lord, if it's the wisdom of Christ, and that's what rules our thinking and drives us, moves us, if that's how we think, then certainly we are going to save ourselves and we're going to be able, at least, to save those around us. We're looking at some alternative philosophies, though. Some, and I really like to call three of them the evil trilogy. And I may talk more about that as I get into the last lesson. But the idea of evolution and how it is so connected to humanism. And as we'll talk about this morning, hedonism. What is hedonism? As we begin to look at hedonism, and you may have seen this term, people talk about hedonism or a hedonistic philosophy or idea. It's a school of thought. It argues for something very simple, and that is the pursuit of pleasure or fun. Now, I'm going to say from the very beginning, and I want you to understand this, that I like fun like anyone does. I believe that having fun or having pleasure is fine. That God put us on earth, that He made the Garden of Eden, for example. It was a beautiful place, a wondrous place, as the description is given. And He meant for man to enjoy it. And so the idea of pleasure is not wrong, but this is arguing for the pursuit of pleasure. Believing that it alone yields happiness, and therefore, pursuing pleasure becomes the highest or the primary or chief goal. It's the most important goal of human life. And the result of that then, and this would be a line right out of the hedonistic philosophy, all people have the right, listen carefully to this, all people have the right to do everything in their power to achieve the greatest amount of pleasure possible to them. Now, if you think about that for a moment, here's what it's basically saying, in short. You only live once. You've got a short amount of time, relatively speaking, on earth to live. You better go for it. You better get all out of life you can. You better have all the fun you can have. And it even comes down to the idea of, while you're young, you know, before you get old and broken down like me, you better really have some fun because it's fleeting. And so grab it while you can get it. And that becomes the driving force of those who buy into this philosophy. And I think we look around us and we see that our society really is consumed with this idea. Simply put, hedonism believes that pleasure, fun, having fun, and the happiness that that brings is what's most important in life. I want to kind of bring it back to a timeless struggle. Because when we're talking about hedonism, we're not looking at something like evolution that we can go back and say, you know, really, in the 1800s, that was the beginning of evolution. Man descending, as it were, or ascending, however you want to look at that, from, you know, lower forms of life. Humanism, we talked about last Sunday morning, and we said, really, that was the convergence of two major philosophies. Remember, one from Germany, one from France. And we look at the late 1700s, early 1800s for that. But with hedonism, this is timeless. The idea of pleasure and having fun and the pursuit of that, and it makes you happy. That really, we could go back, for example, and this doesn't go all the way back to the beginning. But it's a timeless struggle of two very divergent thoughts, and I'm going to show those in just a second. And I think you can see that, and we all know Socrates, the philosopher from Greece, Socrates. He had a student, Aristippus, and they, in their lifetimes, really argued these two different approaches to life. Socrates argued for the higher pleasures of intellect. We talk about Socrates, we look at, you know, the whole scientific approach and the deductive reasoning and all of that kind of thing. But Socrates said you take great pleasure in life from exercising your mind, the intellect, the thought that you have and the thought process. And for human beings, it's much more than base pleasure. It's a higher form of happiness, a higher form of pleasure. Well, a student, Aristippus of Cyrene, he denied the validity of Socrates' distinction. And basically what he said is that bodily pleasures, and we all understand what that means, the lust, the desires you have, being simpler and more intense, were preferable. So momentary pleasure, that is, you desire something, you go for it, you enjoy it, it makes you happy, however fleeting that might be, it makes you happy, derived from physical experience, you see, is the only real good for humans. And therefore, as Aristippus said, and you see I've quoted it here, pleasure is the highest good. Now I want you to think about that for a moment. What makes you happy in life? If I were to send around a survey and get everyone here to answer that, what makes you happy in life? What if I were to say, what makes you the happiest in life? When do you feel good? What makes you feel good? Be honest, at least with yourself. You would have a list of things. And you might talk about bodily pleasures, physical experiences. But as you mature and you begin to reflect on what makes you happy and what feels good, you understand there are some things that are very fleeting. They're momentary, they feel good, they're gone. And there are other things that build over the course of time, the love we might have for someone as it grows and matures and deepens and so forth. And that good, that feeling, that pleasure,
yes,
is lasting. And so we talk about, for example, the idea, and it's a classic struggle, of instant gratification versus delayed gratification. I'll give you just look at what the two are arguing for. Socrates would be saying, you know, to think like a human being, to have this higher way of thinking and living, the thought processes that go on in my mind that make me know I am higher, I'm greater. Now, he might not have believed in God, but he was exactly right about that, at least. He said, that brings me good, that brings me satisfaction. Yes, that even brings me pleasure. Aristippus said, no. No, what brings you pleasure in life when you have intense fun is when you just simply want something, desire something, and act on it. But you see, while that's instant gratification, it's fleeting. We all understand that, you know, I might, and I give you a very base, you know, example here, one you've heard me use quite a bit. I love Reese's Cups, right? I could eat them every day, never get tired of them. When I was a little kid, sometimes, you know, we would, grandmother, mom, or someone would give us money and let us go to the store. Now, I'm old enough, a lot of you younger, you won't remember this, but you older people will. We get a dime. You might think, well, what do you go to the store and buy with a dime? Nothing now, you know. But back then, a dime would buy you a small one-cup Reese's Cup and a 6 1/4 ounce Coke. And sometimes the debate I would have is, do I want the Coke and the Reese's Cup, one cup, or the dime would buy you two, king size.
And I can remember being a little kid. I loved it.
Now, what am I getting at? Boy, eat that Reese's cup, instant gratification. But once the taste leaves your mouth, about 4 or 5 minutes later, it's gone. But there is an older, mature me that loves Reese's cups, that goes into a store and hears them still calling from the rack, come get me. And I say, no. And it's been a while. But the delayed gratification is, you don't do all of that kind of thing, pursue all of that kind of thing. The pounds begin to come off. You begin to feel better about yourself. You are in better health, etc., etc. And there's the delayed gratification. Now, I think we understand that. As we mature, we come to understand that more and more. So let's pursue it a little bit more. Is it live for the moment? Is it get all you can get out of life? Well, yes. And regardless of the approach you take, live for the moment. Am I living for the moment? If I want something right now, I know it'll feel good if I do it, and I just go for it. Yeah. But am I living for the moment if I say, let me deny myself something right now, and in this moment, let me exercise the higher intellect that I have because there's gratification coming in the future if I do. Yeah. Can I get all I can get out of life if I go from moment to moment to moment to moment and simply satisfy myself? You will get all you can get out of life by doing that, but there are many things you will not have in life by doing that. But can I get all I can get out of life if I again maybe deny myself things at times, looking for that delayed gratification, building something in life? Well, the answer is yes. For example, I could go from person to person to person to person and satisfy a basic desire that God created within me, a sexual desire. And I could get all I can get out of life by doing that, but I would never get the higher companionship, the greater relationship that God meant for me to have by denying myself some things, yes. Saying no to myself. Just as much as in a far simpler way, I look at the Reese's cup laying on the shelf and I say, no, I won't do that. Maybe every once in a great while I may have something like that, but I won't daily just do that because it feels good, tastes good, I want it now. I will deny myself so I can get all I can get out of life. Because, you know, the truth is, I'd really like to live longer. I've got a lot to live for. And as you build life and build relationships, you begin to think in those terms. It's not just about me satisfying me at the moment. It is me doing what's best for myself and for others around you. So live for the moment, get all you can get out of life. A hedonist, you see, strives to maximize what he calls net pleasure. Now stay with me for a moment because this is interesting, but I think we understand this. He calls it net pleasure. And that is, in a very mathematical way, it is pleasure minus pain. And he approaches it that way. He pursues his pleasure regardless of the hurt to himself or other people. And he goes for that as long as it is net positive. Now, I want you to understand something mathematically, and everybody in here is a little bit mathematical. You understand this. 13 minus 8 is 5. I still get 5. There's still a net gain to 5. But what I've lost is 8. 13 minus 8 is 5. A hedonist looks at life like that. He says, I want the fun. I want the pleasure. It will hurt me. I know that. It will take away things from my life. I know that. 13 minus 8. But net, I'll still have 5. I will have the pleasure. I will lose some things, yes, but I still have net pleasure. Stop and think about that for a minute. Is that my approach to life? A person might say, well, no. Well, is it? I'm going to be honest with you.
When I weighed over 165 pounds more than I do right now, that was my approach to life. I knew that if you keep living like this, you keep eating like this, you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to lose some life. You're going to lose some time. There are people sitting up here on this second bench that I love more than I love life itself. And I'm going to lose time with them. And I'm going to lose what I could have with them if I don't get control of this. And that's the way you approach life. But a hedonist doesn't. A hedonist looks at life and says, you know, I will overeat. And I'll have all the Reese's I want. And I will smoke and I will drink and I will do the drugs and I'll do anything I want to do. Because it gives me pleasure and it gives me net pleasure. Net positive of pleasure. I may lose some time, but look at what I have. And he looks back at me and he says, what are you sacrificing all of your life that you've got? What are you giving all that up for? A few extra years? When you're old and you feel bad anyway? Oh, you miss it. You miss what you're really gaining. When you learn to conduct yourself, when you learn the value of sacrifice for a higher good. When you learn, for example, not to have to sit down, and you learn you don't have to sit down at the end of a day and go back through the checklist of your day and say to yourself, I was selfish all day long. I felt good during the day at this point and that point because I did this, this, and this, but I was selfish, and look at what I lose. He doesn't understand that, but you and I do. Because in stark contradistinction, I mean, Christianity stands exactly opposite of that philosophy. A Christian knows and he learns. I mean, James read the passage in Acts chapter 8 this morning, and it's a passage that talks about someone who gave everything, sacrificed everything, for what? I'm going to tell you that Jesus gave up years of his life, and Jesus gave up a lot of pain. Jesus gave up a lot of pleasure he could have had. But what does he get out of it? What he gets out of it is being the Savior and of having all these people for all eternity that he would not have. And we learn from that. Because you see, a Christian sacrifices personal pleasure to maximize what he gets out of it, to minimize the hurt to himself and to other people. And that's the way he thinks. I look at life, I approach life by saying, what choices can I make in life that I get the absolute most out of life? Oh, I might give up a Reese's cup or a lot of other things. I might give that up. But what do I get? I get things that a hedonist will never have, will never understand. I wonder sometimes the way people live their lives. I wonder sometimes how they think, how they feel. I wonder, for example, in their relationships. I know what I feel when I look at my wife. I know what I have. I know what I have when I look at my daughter and my son-in-law. I know what I have. I know the net gain there is in that. But I wonder, the person that lives the selfish life, that makes choices based on what fleeting amount of pleasure I might have for this 5 minutes of time. Oh, they may have relationships, companionships. They may look at someone, but what do you even think? What do you feel? What satisfaction deep inside do you have? You see, you lose. And you can call that net positive. 13 minus 8 is still 5. But what is the 5? What is the five that you left with knowing that you lost the eight and you didn't have to? You lost the eight because you were selfish. You lost that part of your life because you made choices based on just instant gratification that you could never hold on to. What net positive is that? And so we continue to look at this. And you know, one of the oldest recorded advocacies, if you will, for hedonism, and this goes back to one of the most ancient pieces, if not the oldest, that we have. The Epic of Gilgamesh. It comes out of the Iraqi area, the old ancient Chaldean or Babylonian nation. But Siduri advised this, and listen to this quote, "Fill your belly. Day and night make merry. Let days be full of joy. Dance and make music day and night, because these things alone are the concern of man." I think we look around us and we could just about say, boy, you know, a lot of people buying into Siduri's advice. Just party all day, every day, because really that's all life is. Get all you can get while you can get it. When you look back at ancient Egyptian tombs, and these are interesting. Now, you know, I'm not sure we all want to go walking through the graveyards to learn what we can learn, but there's a lot of wisdom in graveyards. There really is. But in ancient tombs, it's interesting because some of the most ancient will depict, for example, a harper. I mean, it's somebody playing a harp. And it'll depict a harper playing at a feast. And commonly on these tombs, it'll portray very hedonistic activities. And I won't graphically describe them, but you can imagine. And then it will call for, that is, as though someone is calling from the grave to any passerby or any onlooker, it'll call for you to submit to pleasure and life, because it will say there is no assurance of being rewarded good in the afterlife. And you know what the tomb is saying? I'm dead now, and what I'm saying to you is you better enjoy every day, all day, get the most pleasure out of the day you can get, and it will depict all of these, you know, wild parties and everything going on. So you understand exactly what that now dead person is saying to you from the grave. But you better enjoy it now, because nothing is promised to you in the afterlife. And there are a lot of odes, that is, Egyptian poems, and there are probably lyrics to songs. There's several, not say a lot, but there are several of them that exist from ancient times. And they call on people to do things like this. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but drop down to the last three lines of the lyrics of what was probably a song during that day. Follow thy desire and thy good. Fulfill thy needs upon the earth. You know, a man's got needs, for example. Fulfill thy needs upon earth after the command of thy heart. Whatever your emotions tell you to do, they're commanding you to do, go for it. Until there comes for thee that day of mourning. And you see, it's the call from the grave saying to, it's like the older person that's lived a hedonistic life and now is racked with pain and all the destruction that comes a lot of times from that kind of life. And they're looking to the young person, not warning them, don't follow in my steps. Don't give up what I gave up to have a life that I had, have and end up like me. No. They call for the younger person, go for it just like I did. Because life is going to pass you by quickly. So enjoy it while you can. That's not a new thing, you see. This is something that ancient Egyptians did. It's a philosophy in which the Bible describes. Let me just read some quotes. Follow along with me up here. Romans chapter 16 and verse 18 describes those who are such, and very hedonistic people, those who are such serve their own belly. This word belly in the original language just means a cavity, a hole. And I want you to understand what's going on here is, in human beings, we need fulfillment. We are hungry and thirsty. You know, it's like the popular phrase, so-and-so is thirsty, you know. We understand what that means in a bar or on a dance floor. But you see, all human beings are thirsty. All human beings are hungry. And blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. Not those who serve their own hole. That is, there is a hole within me. It needs to be filled up, and I'm just going to go for it. That's what Paul is talking about in that passage. Same word is used in Philippians 3 when it describes a person whose God is their belly. I yield, I obey what's calling to me, the desires within me, whose glory is in their shame, who mind earthly things. Or, like the passage that Marvin read for us, meats for the belly for meats. In other words, I've got basic desires, I've got hungers, I've got thirst, go for it. Go for it as long as you've got the energy to go for it. And finally, as Paul quoted one of the philosophers from Crete, the Cretans are always liars, evil beasts. The King James says slow bellies or lazy gluttons, heathens. Just go for it and fill that hole up, fill that cavity up with anything you can get because life is short. So, hedonism. How does a Christian look at hedonism? I want you to go with me to Ephesians chapter 5. In Ephesians 5, Paul has just finished describing the idea of the new man. That is, a new approach to life. Put on the new man, which is after God, after Christ, created in righteousness, holiness. Now he comes to chapter 5, and notice what he says in verses 1 and 2. Be ye therefore followers of God as dear children, and walk in love as Christ also has loved us. Notice the sacrifice, and has given himself for us. Now this is what he's saying. You follow in the steps of Jesus Christ. Yes, it is going to be some sacrifice. I would never try to stand in a pulpit and preach to people. If you're going to be a Christian, you don't have to give up anything. No, there's much you have to give up. There is much sacrifice. But again, sacrifice for delayed gratification. But listen as Paul goes on here. Christ gave himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma, our Savior. In fact, notice as he goes on in this passage, look at verse 3. But fornication and all uncleanness or filthiness and covetousness, let it not be once named among you as becomes or is fitting to saints. You hear what he's saying there? What he's saying is, these things that hedonists pursue, and the fornication obviously is a huge driving thing in our society, premarital, extramarital, postmarital, etc., etc., etc. But to a Christian, let it not even be mentioned or contemplated. I don't do that. Someone approaches you. You go out to get a haircut. Now, thankfully, I found a good barber, so I'm not worrying about this right now. But the one I had that I went to before I found this one, I'm sitting there last year, and I'm getting my hair cut, and this woman begins to talk to me about, you know, her dogs that I really wasn't all that interested in, but I know people are dog lovers, you know. And somehow that moved to she was going to be off tomorrow. And I'm like, who cares? You know, I mean, that's great. And I'm too stupid to realize that you're being hit on here. But the next thing she said to me left no doubt whatsoever. I'm like, you know, I'm married. That's okay. I don't do that. In fact, what I'm going to do, and what I did, was I went home and I told Montel and I told Juliet about it. And I said, now, I want to tell you exactly what she was saying. Was I missing something? And Jules is looking at me with this big grin on her face. You're not missing anything. That's exactly what's going on. That's where we are. That's where we are. And for a Christian, I don't do that. I don't contemplate that. I don't think about that. You know, person, well, aren't you human? Of course I'm human. But you make decisions. And you say to yourself, yeah, I can do what everybody else does. I can do that. Or I can have this over here. I grow old with someone I love. I can have a family. and it can stay together and be strong. And there are a lot of things you can get out of life by doing that, by saying, no, no, I won't do that. And that's the difference. And then Paul goes on here. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting. It's all the joking about it, you see. It's all the things that people look at, and it's the crude talking. Our entertainment is filled with it. Television shows, movies, music, talk shows, news broadcasts are filled with it. I watched a great game last night. Some of you don't want to hear about this, but I watched a great game last night. But I watched a better post-game interview. And I watched a young newscaster ask a young backup quarterback, how did you deal with being pulled last year in the middle of a national title game and yet be strong and remain focused so you could come in and do what you just did out there on that field? And this is what he said. I believe in God. God was with me the whole way. God helped me. God did this. And the young newscaster didn't want to hear that. You see, we're people of faith. I'm not about just going around all day, every day, thinking about how filthy can I be? What pleasure can I get over the course of the next 3 to 5 minutes? I'm not looking for all the jokes and the suggestions and all of that kind of thing. No whoremonger, no unclean person, no covetous, which is idolatry. None of these people enter into the kingdom of God. What the Bible is saying here, and notice as Paul goes on in verses 8, 10, and 11. I'll quote part of it. Walk as children of light, verse 8. Proving what is acceptable to the Lord, verse 10. Proving it, demonstrating it. That's what Jalen was doing in that interview. He held back for a year while people taunted him. While people talked about the stupid mistake he was making to remain on this team. And all of this kind of thing. And why aren't you angry about this? And why aren't you saying that? And he held back, he reserved that for the moment when now he has proved. And he's saying, God leads me in my life. And he's a strong young man of faith. A great example. But you know, the point is, what Ephesians 5 is telling you as a Christian, you don't have to buy into hedonism. Just because everybody around you, it seems like, lives for the moment. And you may be missing out, quote unquote, if you don't go for it. You're not missing out on anything. Except an alternate way of living so that, and I want you to hear this, especially you young people, an alternate way of living so you lose in the end. You lose the 8 from the 13. Oh, you get the 5. But you know, the point of being a Christian is sacrifice some things, give up some things that you never, ever have to have, and get the most net positive out of life. That's what Paul is saying here. And so, prove the acceptable way of the Lord. Let me close out quickly with this. There are several passages in the Bible that teach us to do this. Listen to this. Cast off the works of darkness. Walk honestly, the King James says. Really, the word is decorously. It's like having decorum in life. Being proper. Fitting. Doing what you're supposed to do. Not in carousing and drunkenness. Not in chambering. Bed to bed to bed to bed. Living your life like that. Not in lasciviousness, which is a filthy behavior. Make not provision for the flesh. One quick thing. Go back to the barber last year. I don't work tomorrow. Okay, good. No, we could not. We're not getting together. We're not having lunch together. We're not certainly going out for a drink together. We ain't even going for a cup of coffee at Starbucks together. Because I'm a human being. I'm not going to dance as close to the edge as I can get. I know me. I'm not Superman. I can fall and fail like anybody. But what I can do is listen to God when God says, don't make provision for it. Don't be at those places. Don't be with those people. Don't do the things they do. Don't listen to it. Not even in a joking, jesting manner. Don't make provision for the flesh. Not once named among you. Have a better life than that. As obedient children, 1 Peter chapter 1. Not fashioning yourselves. Listen to that. It's like copying a pattern. Jacqueline would know all about this. Those of you that sew and so forth, I remember my grandmother doing this. Don't ever remember a time when she didn't. You got a pattern you follow. It's interesting to watch them cut out pieces of material and sew them together, and out comes this beautiful garment. Not fashioning yourselves. What does that mean? That means you begin to take you and copy the pattern of what? Of the world. And how the world lives in the lust of their flesh. You begin to copy that. You begin to do what they do, go where they go, be with those people they're with. And guess what comes out of that? You are like them. That's exactly what Peter is talking about here. No, you be holy in all manner of conduct. And there's an interesting passage, and I don't really have time to explore it, so I'll very quickly just read it. Don't any longer, no longer live your remaining time. That is from this point on today. Don't live the rest of your time here on earth in men's desires. The desires that rule human flesh. Don't do that. Don't make a choice. Don't accomplish the will of the world or the Gentiles, as Peter puts it in chapter 4. You did that once. And maybe it is that you're here today and you've done that. And you look back on a portion of your life and you say, you're right. I walked in that. I did all this list of things he's talking about here, all the partying, all everything, the disgusting behavior that he describes there. I did all that. But I got a choice today. And today I can begin to pass the rest of my time in holiness. I can deny those things. I can say no more to those things. And all the destruction that goes with it. And that's what Peter is talking about. Oh, there will be people who will mock you and laugh at you and wonder about you. You know, you might walk down the halls of a school like I did at nearly 18 years old. And people hear the rumor and begin to pass it around. He became a Christian this weekend. Him! Can you believe that? And people would walk up to me and laugh and say, it's not true, is it? Oh yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. And they may laugh at you. Oh, you're not going to do this anymore? You're right. I'm not going to. Well, don't you want to do so and so? Sure. Sure, there's a part of me that would like to do those things. It would feel good to me just like it feel good to anybody. But I won't. And from this point on, I'll try with everything I've got to pass the rest of my time making better choices, living a better way. Some of you young people know, and I say this to you, make the choices now. Make some sacrifices. Give up some things now. And watch yourself 10 years from now. 15 years from now. You may be 16 or 18 now. When you're 30 years old, wake up and look around you at everybody you know who lives like they're telling you to live. And see where they are as opposed to where you are. If you're here this morning and you're not a child of God, you believe that Jesus is the Son of God. You'll confess that this morning. You're willing to repent to change your life, to bring your life in harmony with the wisdom of the Lord, to make the choices. And today you'll be baptized for forgiveness of your sins. Or it might be that you've done that and you've made choices you wish you didn't make. Make today the day that it changes. If you'd like to come and ask for the prayers of the people here, we'd be glad to pray together with you. Won't you please come while we sing this song?